Our first reading, Old Testament reading, is Psalm 126, and that is at the bottom of page 517. When the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dream. Then our mouth was filled with laughter and our tongue with shouts of joy. Then they said among the nations, "The Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us. We are glad. Restore our fortunes, O Lord, like the streams in the Negev. Those who sow in tears shall reap with shouts of joy. He who goes out weeping, bearing the seed for sowing, shall come home with." Reading is Romans 8, 18 to 25, and that's on page 944 in the Black Bibles. Make sure I'm in the right spot. Okay. "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope, that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. Now hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience." This is the word of the Lord.
All right. Good morning again. Good to be together. I just want to shout out our musicians, Stephen and Claire. Can we give it up for Stephen and Claire real quick? They would not want me to do this, but I'm so grateful for them. They have served a lot over the last, well, many weeks, but particularly the last few days. So Claire had a performance with, am I right, the Rhode Island Philharmonic, is that right? The last 2 days, and in between those two performances, she shot over to Massachusetts to play at a wedding. Davis and Melanie got married yesterday, and Stephen and Claire played, and I was able to preach at that wedding. So they've been all over the place and have still prepared a beautiful worship service for us, so really grateful for them this morning. And part of why I named that is because yesterday, Davis and Melanie's wedding, if you know Davis, one of our members here, got married, and it was what I would describe as a glory day. They had a Lord of the Rings-themed wedding, which was not my first Lord of the Rings-themed wedding, actually, that I participated in, but it was outdoors at this beautiful camp area, and I mean, literally, there was like woodpeckers pecking during the service. It was like the most perfect scene. It was a glory day for me, I hope for the McDonald's too, but they certainly contributed to the glory of that day yesterday. I'm curious for you, when was a time in your life that you would describe as your glory days? A time where if you could go back and just relive it just like it was, you'd want to do that. I know with our college students here today, they are in a unique moment where they're coming to the end of a chapter of glory days that they've had this year and perhaps on to the next year, whether it's in school again or somewhere else, with perhaps glory days ahead. What about for you? Maybe your high school sports team, you were an all-star. Maybe your early marriage days, maybe days as a bachelor. Maybe your days as a single person living in the city. What were your glory days? Maybe you have a phase that's easy to call to mind, or maybe you feel like you're in your glory days right now. Or maybe you're still hoping that your glory days are ahead. Regardless, I think we all tend to have a pretty weird relationship to our glory days. We don't really know how to think about them. Often we don't know when we're in them. Often we wish we were, and we might feel a little tinge of guilt about that. Or maybe we're longing for the glory days of the past. You all know the the trope of the guy in the TV show who's still living his glory days from his high school football team 20 years later. Most of us just honestly don't know how to relate to the glory days. What I think we're going to learn from this psalm this morning is that actually it is vital for us as Christians, as human beings, to learn how to relate to our glory days rightly. So this morning we're going to learn how we ought to do this. If you remember last week and now this week, we're looking at this genre of psalms called the Psalms of Ascent. We believe these may have been psalms, songs that the Israelites would have sung on their pilgrimages back to the capital of Israel. And this would have been a really unique theme for a pilgrimage back to Israel, a fitting occasion for this type of a song, because you see, pilgrimages were always a part of Israel's life, but after they were exiled and returning, they took on a different significance. Part of the purpose of the pilgrimages were to return to Israel so that they could celebrate festivals and feasts. In some ways, God required the Israelites to return to the capital of Israel that they might have glory days. And this song is a celebration of those glory days. God himself wants us to know how to relate to glory days. In fact, I believe that the reality is we were created for glory days. And longing for and relating rightly to our glory days is one of the fundamental ways that we express our humanity and live life the way that God has created us and called us to live. So as we look at this psalm together this morning, we're going to ask two questions. What are the glory days and how do we relate to them? First, what are the glory days anyways? In verse 1, the psalmist describes the glory days as these days when the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion. So a little context might be helpful. Zion represents the political and spiritual state of the people as sort of the capital area. As Zion goes, so does the country of Israel, the community of Israel. Something akin to like D.C. or New York City, right? New York represents the cultural, financial capital of the U.S. So as New York goes, in some ways, so does the country. The psalmist is remembering these glory days when the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion. So I'm not a Hebrew and Greek expert. The Old Testament originally was written in Hebrew, New Testament in Greek. I'm not an expert, but I did take these languages in seminary, and I learned enough to know, like when I'm reading the English, when it was probably a phrase that was difficult to translate. That's about what I got out of my Greek and Hebrew classes in seminary. And so when I saw this phrase, restored the fortunes of Zion, it kind of clicked with me like that's probably a weird phrase in the Hebrew. And so I was able to go and look it up, which you can also do. Lots of software out there, websites where you can find these things too. But I looked up the phrase in Hebrew that's used here. And if we translated this phrase more like linguists would say, like woodenly, more kind of specifically what the words are in Hebrew, it would translate to something more like when God reversed the exile. Restored the fortunes of Zion is actually something more like reversed the exile. And so you see what the psalmist is remembering are the glory days when God brought Israel back to Jerusalem from exile. All right, short history lesson. Israel was established as a political kingdom with a king around 1000 BC. It existed in various forms with various, you know, seasons of success and failure and power over a few hundred years. Until around 722 BC, they were overtaken by Assyria. Assyria began to deport some of the Israelites from Judah and the surrounding area to different parts of its territory. This was a common thing that nations would do when they took over other nations. Then a few hundred years later, Babylon took over, and Babylon pretty much makes sure that nobody is left in Jerusalem. They burn down the temple. They absolutely destroy the city and obliterate the Jewish people and all of their culture. They live this way in exile for about 50 years until Persia takes over, and they actually allow the Israelites to return to Jerusalem. This is the moment that the psalmist is remembering here. This moment when all the Israelites were allowed to return to Jerusalem. This was God reversing the exile. These were the glory days for the psalmist. I share all of this with you because I think this idea of reversing the exile is extremely appropriate in the way that we ought to think about our own glory days. You see, Jerusalem and what he refers to as Zion here, throughout all of Scripture, it was meant to be a picture of the Garden of Eden. And if there were ever glory days for all of humanity, the glory days for humanity were when we were still in the Garden of Eden, living in perfect relationship with God, with ourselves, with other people, and with the world around us, perfectly living in light of our design, flourishing in every sense of the word. These were the glory days. But because of humanity's sin and rebellion, we've been exiled from Eden. Exiled now to live in a world full of death and decay and brokenness and sin and evil. The glory days have been lost. But God promised Adam and Eve that the glory days weren't lost forever. They would still experience fruit of harvest. It would just come by the sweat of their brow. They would still experience the glory, the joy of childbirth, but it would come through pain and suffering. They would still experience glory, but ultimately it would come through death. In order for us to experience the glory we were created for, the glory days of the Garden of Eden, what we need is for God to reverse the exile. This is what we need. Just what the psalmist celebrates happened for them, we need to happen for us. For us to experience glory, we need to reverse the curse. Reverse the effects of the fall. Ultimately, God does this through Jesus Christ, who came and embodied the glory of God, the glory of the garden throughout his entire life. So that as we live by faith in him, we can experience glory here and now. And by the resurrection, Christ secured for us glory days ahead, proved to us that glory does come on the other side of death. So you see, in some ways, the story of the Bible, you could say, is the story of glory days. We were created for glory. We were exiled from glory. We're being restored to the glory days, and one day we'll be renewed in glory. The glory days are when we experience this reverse of exile from the Garden of Eden. And so I think in order for us to live in light of the Christian story, to live rightly, to live the way we were created and called to live, we have to know how to relate to the glory days. Because we were created for glory days. So how do we relate to them? Three things: remember them, enjoy them, and long for them. First, we need to remember the glory days. I love the beginning of this psalm. Cassie was right. It's a happy psalm. I feel like I preached some heavy sermons recently. Hopefully this will be a lighter one. The beginning of the psalmist just unabashedly and seemingly dramatically remembers and celebrates the glory days of the past for his country. He's like a grandpa just celebrating the past. Back in my day, we just had a stick and a ball and we had so much fun. We didn't have any screens. Does that sound like your grandpa? Sounds like me talking to my kids. The good old days, right? Always better. I think from these verses we can learn three quick lessons about how we ought to remember the glory days. First, authentically. We should remember the glory days authentically. The psalmist says, we were like those who dream. He was remembering this return from exile, this reunion with old friends and family members and neighbors. He remembers the day of rebuilding the city together. Remembers restoring cultural festivals and feasts that they hadn't been able to celebrate for decades. And he remembers these days like they were a dream. Another way to think about this is like he was remembering these days like they were too good to be true. And you know what? As a matter of fact, they were. The nature of the case is that the days of return were not actually a dream. It was actually pretty messy. Upon return, there was all kinds of inner conflict amongst the Israelites, fighting and arguing about how they should celebrate various festivals and feasts, who should live where. There was a lot of work to be done, a lot of disagreement about how that work should be done. There was confusion. There was economic hardship and discouragement. Life after return was not all dreams and roses, but it was complicated and difficult and disappointing. But you see, at this moment, the psalmist doesn't rehash all that. The psalmist is remembering this moment of return from exile, these glory days, through rose-colored glasses. And you know, I think that's okay. In fact, I think this is actually a positive spiritual practice for us. And I'm treading a little lightly here. It's a relatively new thought. I've been praying about it a lot this week. But I do think our memory, it's always filtered through something, right? And I think here the psalmist models for us allowing certain memories to be filtered through rose-colored glasses. Now, of course, we just went through a whole series on lament. I'm not suggesting we remember all the past this way. It is right for us to remember our suffering and the brokenness of our past. But I also think it's appropriate at times to remember the glory of the good old days just as glorious as we want to remember them. Because I think what's happening here is this is reflecting our brain and our body's desire for Eden. There's a reason that this is a universal experience. I've been listening to Macklemore's Good Old Days song this week. Listen to it when you leave here. And he says, maybe we always look back and think it was better than it was. This is a universal experience, and I think that actually this is a gift given to us by God. It's a product of our design as humans to long for Eden. To look back through those memories with rose-colored glasses and to just remember the good ways that we experience relationships with others like we were created to. The good ways that we experienced our relationship with God the way we were created to. The good ways that we experience our relationship to the world the way that we were created to. This reflects our good design, our longing for Eden, our longing for glory. That's actually how we authentically remember a memory. I think we should celebrate that. Remember the past authentically. Celebrate the glory of the good old days. We should also remember the past glory days specifically. Then our mouth was filled with laughter, our tongues with shouts of joy. The psalmist recounts specific experiences of joy that he and his fellow Israelites had. We've talked a lot about naming our suffering specifically. Here, I think we get a small picture of naming our joys specifically. This was a common practice throughout the history of Israel. Go read Psalm 105 or 106, where the psalmist is recounting specifically the glory of the good old days. There's detailed stories throughout the history of Israel. They wrote down specifically how they celebrated the good old days so that they could remember them and recall them and recount them specifically. I don't know if we do this enough anymore. I got to ride home from a meeting in Massachusetts with an older pastor a couple weeks ago, and it literally was 3 hours of him just telling me stories of ministry over the past 40 years in New England. And it was wonderful. I'm certain that it was not as glorious as he made it out to be. But I got to just hear glory after glory after glory, and it encouraged me in my own life. I want to encourage you, remember the good old days. We take so many pictures. Go and look at them. I've been scrolling social media less lately and looking more at our Google Photos. Google Photos always gives me memories from 10 years ago. And it's so fun to go back and look at the good old days. I think this is actually an important spiritual practice for us because it reminds us of God's past goodness even if we don't feel it in the present. And that's the last way we ought to remember the glory days is thankfully. Verse 3, then they said among the nations, verse 2, the Lord has done great things for them. Yes, the Lord has done great things for us. You see, the psalmist in recalling the glory days remembers that the glory days are something that the Lord has done. Even the other nations, usually were enemies of God and his people, even they saw that God was doing something good for his people. And the psalmist echoes the nation's sentiment. Yes, God has done great things for us. You see, we ought to remember the good old days authentically and specifically so that we can give thanks for them. As I look back through my Google Photos, it would be wrong for me to want to just push rewind and go back to 10 years. It is appropriate for me to look at those and say, thank you, God, for those days 10 years ago. Thank you for the glory days. You see, God alone is responsible for our good old days. This will come up time and again throughout this sermon. All we deserve because of our sin is exile. We don't deserve to have the exile reversed. We don't deserve good old days. So any experience that we have of unity, of joy, of glory is a result of the gracious generosity of God. And so we ought to give God thanks. So we must remember the glory days of the past. And if we do this, it will help us to better enjoy the glory days in the present. That's point number two of how we experience or relate to the glory days. We enjoy them. I think so many of us have a hard time knowing how to relate to the glory days, not only in the past, but also in the present. Especially as Christians, I feel like sometimes we feel guilty about having a good time, about being in the glory days. We feel like we should always be suffering or feel bad if we're experiencing glory days and somebody else isn't. But friends, the reality is God is gracious to give us glory days. And when he does, it's important that we enjoy them. But how? First, we should enjoy them humbly. This, again, comes right off of that last point in how we ought to remember them. The psalmist time and again relates the glory days not to himself, not to his people, but to God. He recognizes that he's not responsible for the glory days, but God alone is. So he enjoys them when they come, but he does so humbly, knowing that he doesn't deserve the glory days. He didn't earn the glory days. I think that one of the reasons we have a hard time enjoying glory days is because we forget that they're all a gift. We think we have to earn them. And so we're always worried about losing them, or we're always working towards the next set of glory days. We're always stressed. Versus if we recognize humbly that the glory days are a gift to us, they're not something that I've earned or that I can lose, but they're something that inevitably are going to come and go. But they're always given to me by the grace of God. So we should enjoy them humbly, receive the glory days as a gift from God. And we should enjoy them fully and freely too. The Israelites did not hold back in their celebration upon return from exile. You can go look at Ezra 3 or Ezra chapter 6. That recounts all the festivals and feasts and worship services. These were raucous experiences. Shouting and singing and dancing and eating and drinking. Nehemiah 12 talks about when they rebuilt the wall around Jerusalem. They literally surrounded the whole city to sing songs, to shout praise, to celebrate. My favorite is Hezekiah's Passover celebration. I don't have the reference here. You'll have to Google it. Crazy party. Lasted 2 weeks. Included over 2,000 bulls and 17,000 sheep. Israelites were not vegetarians. Days of festival and worship and singing and drinking. All of this because God wanted them to fully and freely enjoy the glory days that he had offered to them. We shouldn't feel guilty about enjoying glory days. Receive them and enjoy them as gifts from God. The Bible is chock full of instructions that we ought to enjoy the good gifts that God gives to us. Go read Song of Solomon. Don't miss them. Enjoy the glory days when they're offered to you. Again, I'll quote the great theologian Macklemore. I wish somebody would have told me, someday these will be the good old days. Someday soon your whole life's going to change and you'll miss the magic of these good old days. Don't miss it. When you're in the glory days, soak them up fully and freely. So we take a lot of pictures. I had Alex come and shoot a video of our family one day last year because I just was afraid that I was going to forget the glory of these days. Go outside this time of year. Go walk around St. Mary's. Take in the glory that's offered to you. Receive the glory days as good gifts. You don't earn them, you don't deserve them, but enjoy them fully and freely with thanksgiving when you get them. So we remember them, we enjoy them when we have them, and we long for glory days to come. Maybe you feel like, I can't even like remember glory days. I feel so far removed from glory days, I'm not even sure they exist for me. Maybe they're not possible. And even for those of us who might feel like we're in the glory days now, we might wonder, like, is this really it? I think it's an important spiritual practice for us to never stop longing for glory days. Whether you've never had them, whether they're a long time ago, or whether you're in them now, we must all always be longing for glory days. In verse 4, the psalmist asks God to restore our fortunes. Uses the exact same language from verse 1. Really interesting. Remember, this is kind of like saying, return us from exile. But you see, the Israelites hadn't been exiled again. So why is he making this same request? I believe it's because the psalmist realizes that even the glory of the return to Jerusalem was not everything that he had longed for. That scene I mentioned in Ezra 3 that was full of great celebration was actually at the very same time filled with great sadness. You see, they had been gone for about 50 years, so there was still a generation of Israelites who were there in Jerusalem before they had been exiled. And all of those people remembered the glory of the original temple. And so when they rebuilt the temple, the old guys were like, oh, that's not like it used to be. Yeah, you might think that's glorious, but you have no idea what the glory days really were. See, the reality is the psalmist knows that the glory days have not actually been fully restored. The temple isn't that nice. They're still under political control of another country. Their economy is weak. They're still infighting and dissension. And whatever the specifics are, the reality is the current glory days are less glorious than the old glory days. See, regardless of how glorious our glory days are, they're nowhere as glorious as the glory days we and the Israelites were created for. Nowhere as glorious as the glory days in the Garden of Eden. And so I believe it's a proper spiritual practice, whatever your life experience is right now, to be longing for glory days. If you're in the glory days now, you must remember we're not in heaven yet. This is not heaven. These are not ultimately the glory days you were created for, but these glory days are only a shadow of the things to come. If you feel like the glory days were forever ago or you don't think you've had them yet, long for God to give you glory days, not so that you can cling to them and soak them up here, but that you might have a deeper sense of heaven and its glory. I always had a hard time, and I still do, coming back from vacation. I don't know if you have this experience, but for like the first week after vacation, I'm like, oh man, this time last week I was sitting on the beach. This time last week we were going out to a nice dinner. I do it all the time. It's terrible in some ways. But in other ways, I think this sort of reflects a biblical longing. You see, we were created for glory days that would never end. And so it's right for us to be sad when they end, not an experience we were created for. We ought to increase our longing for the eternal glory that is to come. We ought to long for the glory days. We ought to do that prayerfully. Again, the psalmist recognizes there's nothing he can do to bring glory days on, and so he prays and asks God to make it happen. Like streams in the Negev. The Negev was a desert area around Jerusalem, so not a place that typically had streams. Psalmist prays that glory days would be like this, knowing that we deserve exile in the desert, asking God by his grace just to give us streams in the desert. Unnatural, unexpected, perhaps short-lived days, but welcomed and refreshing. We ought to long for the glory days prayerfully. We also ought to long for the glory days faithfully. Verses 5 and 6, the psalmist draws in what would have been a familiar picture for them. This agricultural picture of sowing and reaping. Sowing is hard work, sometimes made harder by the elements, by your own health. But the psalmist says here that the lack of glory days does not keep the farmer in this little allegory from being faithful to do the work he's been called to do. He doesn't just say, well, I'm sad, I don't feel like going to work today, so I'm not going to do what I'm supposed to do. But instead, he remains faithful to the task. And we ought to also not allow the lack of glory days keep us from being faithful to the calling God has placed on our lives. Many of us have a transactional relationship with God. You give me glory days and I'll be faithful to you. But the moment we lose the glory, we start running to other gods to try to fill that void. Regardless of if our days are filled with glory or groaning, we must not stop living the life that God has called us to. And finally, we ought to long for the glory days hopefully. The psalmist is filled with confident hope that those who sow in tears will reap in joy. This is what our Romans 8 passage was getting at. I feel like we read that chapter all the time. I heard another older pastor recently say, if you're going to memorize one chapter in the Bible, Romans 8 would be a good one. I tend to agree. It's a common biblical truth that our faithfulness amidst the suffering of this life somehow mysteriously contributes to our experience of glory in the next. Again, I think it's something about we get an allegory for in nature. The darkness of the winter in Connecticut makes the brightness of spring that much brighter. I think this physical reality is meant to teach us a spiritual truth. Our hope ultimately is not that we have glory days ahead in this life, a nice retirement, a beautiful family, a boat, a good summer. I hope we do, but that's not our ultimate hope. Our ultimate hope is that there are glory days to come that outweigh any glory day we could experience here in this world. This day ahead when the glory of God will cover the earth as the water covers the sea. When we are renewed in perfect relationship with our Maker, with our own selves, with one another, with the world around us, living fully according to our design. These are the glory days we all ought to long for. So let's do that together. I want to invite you to remember the glory days, enjoy them when they come, and all of us together long for the glory days that are ahead. Would you pray with me? God, I confess that I miss it. I miss glory so often when it comes to me because I'm thinking that I have to earn it or work it up and fail to just receive your glory as it comes to me through nature, through other people, through your word, through food and drink. I pray that we would not neglect this calling on our life. You have created us and you have called us to long for glory. I pray that we wouldn't be too easily satisfied, but that any experience that we have of glory in this world, that we would enjoy it fully and freely as a gift from you while it lasts. And when it goes, let that point us to the glory that will never go. The glory of the new heavens and the new earth. Might this be the longing of our souls, individually and collectively for us as a church. Might CPC be a church that longs for glory. We pray all these things in Christ's name. Amen.